Okay, good. So I'm Marshall. I'm from a small town called Valley Station, Kentucky. I went to school in undergrad school, a little Rose Holman Institute of Technology in Indiana. I got an MBA at Indiana U and a PhD at UCLA, and I was college professor and dean. And then for the last next 45 years, I did three things. I traveled all about the world speaking and teaching. So I've been to 102 countries. And on American Airlines alone, I have over 11 million frequent flyer miles. I have over a million miles on BA, and I don't even live there. So, that's how you know you traveled a lot.
How do you feel about your carbon footprint these days? That's a question a lot of people have.
Never think of it. So anyway, then I coach people. So I've been the coach of CL Ford, Pfizer, Glaxo, World Bank, Mayo Clinic, Rockefeller Foundation, on and on and on and on and on. And what I like about coaching is where I learn everything. So although I'm supposed to teach them, I actually learn much more than I teach. And then I write books and articles. So I've written or edited 48 books. I've done six bestsellers, three New York Times bestsellers, one mega big bestseller. And I've done 42 books that were purchased only by my mother, my father, and relatives. So.
That I knew a lot of the bits and bobs of you because I've listened to so much and of course read up on you in the Atlantic article that came out last year and different things and I watched CB Bowman, who was kind enough to introduce us. I watched the podcast with her, and I didn't know though that you had books that only your mom or dad had bought.
Plenty of them. And so then, let's see, anything else about me? I live in Nashville. I lived in
Oh, do
Rancho
you live in Nashville now? I thought you were in
I lived
California. You
in
live in Nashville.
San Diego 30 years in the same house. Now, my daughter's a full professor here at Vanderbilt, so she's not
Yes.
going to move. And then, so I got two grandkids here, and we live now in Nashville. And then I like it here, it's great fun. And then I have a second home in New York City, and then I have home number three in Dubai. So,
Well, that's because your assistant was saying you were in Dubai recently. And so I was wondering if that
right.
was a mix of work and pleasure. I didn't realize you had a home there. Fantastic.
I live in a small building in Dubai, small. It's called the Burj Khalifa. So, actually,
Yeah, heard of that one. Heard of that one.
I live in a Burj Khalifa. So, it's like,
I'm on the 100th floor.
no, I don't live on the 100th floor, but I do live in the Burj Khalifa. So, anyways, I got three homes. Married for 47 years. My wife's a psychologist, also a graduate of Indiana University. She's also from Indiana. My daughter's a professor here and a couple of grandkids. And then my son's in Austin and life is good. So tell me, that's my story of life.
Then that's the name of the book as it's coming out, right? Or A Good
The earned
Life.
life. The earned
Yes, The
life.
Good Life. Excellent. And quick other question, just because my readers are always interested, have you spent any time in Ireland or do you have any Irish
Yeah,
heritage whatsoever?
I've been to Ireland maybe four or five times.
Okay, excellent. And now my big questions for you, because as I mentioned, there's
And
so
by the
much.
way,
Yeah.
like all Americans, almost. I have my green shirt on, you notice that?
Yeah, I see.
Like all Americans, I have ancestors from Ireland, which is
Yeah.
hardly unusual. But I think maybe the ancestry.com, they do this thing, maybe 25% of my ancestry is from Ireland.
Oh, that actually is quite significant, in fact. I mean, just about everybody traces it a little bit, but 25% is a good chunk. Do you happen to know what county offhand or what? Okay. Of course, you know how that people can be so fascinated about their ancestral home and they go to the village and they meet all the cousins and but so it's a big cottage industry here, of course. But my questions for you for the readership would be because there is so much, as you mentioned, the books and the lectures and your impact is so global. Have if you were going to say of all the teachings and the learnings that you've had, if you could prioritize, maybe not from importance, maybe from importance, but I also want to hear your level of difficulty around. What are your top three encouragements for any human being to help themselves have a more fulfilling? It can be career-wise too, but aren't they so intertwined? What
Well,
would
I'm going to talk about two dimensions. I'll give you two answers.
please,
One
please.
dimension is what I do for coaching, helping leaders.
Yeah.
And the three dimensions I'd say for that are one is you have to have courage because everybody I coach has to get feedback. It's not easy to get feedback. It's not easy to look in the mirror. It's not easy to do this. And it takes a lot of courage. Two, you have to have humility because, I've learned that I cannot help perfect people get better. So if someone is perfect, they have no need for me. They're not going to think, obviously they can't get better. So that's fine. So you have to have humility to make you improve. And then you have to have discipline, because everything I do when I coach people involves work. They have to do the day to day to day work. And, you know, they don't get better because I'm good. They get better because they're good. They, you know, dedicated, hardworking people. And my whole job as a coach is just work with great clients. I always get ranked the best coach in the world. Why? Well, nobody knows I'm a good coach. They do know, though, who my clients are, and they're spectacular people, and they all say nice things about me. And so the key to my success is great clients. And if you work with great enough people, you'll look okay. So one of the best people I've ever worked with in my life was Alan Mulally, who was CEO of the Year in the United States, ranked number 3 best leader in the world. And I said to Alan, Alan, of all the people I coach, I spent the least amount of time with you. You improved the most and you were great to start with. What should I learn about coaching from you? And he said, basically, your whole job is work with great people. You work with dedicated, hardworking people, your process is always going to work. And you work with the wrong people, you're just wasting time. That conversation changed my life. So, you know, so in terms of coaching, I got to work with people who are courageous. I've got to work with people who are disciplined and humble. And now in terms of life, which is a different topic, my new book, I talk about 3 things very important for having a great life. One is, now assume you have health and assume you have a middle-class level of income and good relationships with people you love. So assume that's there. Other than that, what matters? 3 things. One, you need a higher aspiration. You know, what am I here for?
Yeah,
why am I doing it? You need something to justify why am I here on earth. Then number 2, and that higher aspiration doesn't have a finish line or a goal. It's beyond that. But then 2, you need your ambition, and our ambitions relate to goal achievement. And then number 3 is your day-to-day actions, which need to be aligned with your ambitions and with your aspirations. And to the degree you can align these 3, life is very good, and it's easier said than done.
Yes.
And for the people I coach, most humans in the history of the world have been stuck in the action phase. They live day-to-day lives. You know, they're nice people. They just do what's in front of them. And that's the history of our ancestors. They just lived. And the people I coach, though, are not that way. They're often addicted to achievement. People I coach, incredibly high achievers. They all have these incredible bios. They've done so much. And the good news is they achieve a lot, but the bad news is that achievement is good only to a point. And one thing that's very important is never put your identity as a human being on your level of achievement for two reasons. One is you don't control the outcomes. Most of achievement, you don't control the outcomes. There are many variables in beside you. But number 2 is, so what if you achieve something? How much satisfaction do you get from that? A week? A month? I mean, one of my people is Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer. And, you know, I said, how's it going? You know, great cure for, you know, vaccine for COVID and CEO of the Year, new book and blah, blah, on and on. I said, what's your biggest challenge? Said, next year?
Yeah.
What do you do next year?
When you have someone, quick question. When you have someone who's very achievement focused and you're encouraging them to have those aspirations, if you have someone else who may not be, maybe you wouldn't coach them because they wouldn't be model.
No. But I don't. The people I coach are all very dedicated, smart people who are all high achievers.
Yes.
I mean, realistically speaking, nobody's writing a check to hire me if they're not.
Yeah, no. I hear you.
Yeah. I am not an expert on coaching unsuccessful people.
Yes. So for the purpose of the book,
I'm not an expert on motivating people. I only work with motivated people. If somebody needs motivation, next.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. So the crux of the book that's about to come out, though, I imagine it's aimed at a lot of more ordinary people that are looking to find how to find that aspiration or how to motivate themselves to achieve it, or no?
No, it's not really aimed at ordinary people. Don't buy books.
Oh, Marshall, that's bold.
Ordinary people don't buy books. Only a tiny number percentage of people buy books.
See, I'm
my books, I've done research. 90%, 97% are college graduates. 2/3 have graduate degrees. No, these are not ordinary people.
By definition, those are not the ordinary people, are they?
No. Ordinary people don't buy books. Ordinary people are not reading what you write in the newspaper. Ordinary yeah. people don't read, much less read something about their careers.
What is it about a person that makes them an achiever? Is it an early on innate? Can it be developed from a coach? Is it a parent? Is it a teacher? Is it all of the above? Have you cracked that code?
One of the things that makes you achiever is delayed gratification. Okay. You're willing to put off something today for something later. And yeah, that's it. And it's interesting though, that's a double-edged sword. The good news for being an achiever is you're great at delayed gratification. I mean, nobody has a PhD that can't have delayed gratification. And, you know, nobody's in shape that doesn't have delayed gratification. You know, why are you in shape? Well, you go on a diet, you work out. And in my book, I talk about every time you take a breath, it's a new me. And achievers are willing to sacrifice the present for the future. That's why they're achievers. Yes, that's generally yeah. good. Let me give you the dark side of that, though.
Okay, please.
Actually, two potential dark sides. One is you can get so focused on achievement, you forget why you're doing it.
Mm.
Why am I doing all this? Why am I working so hard? What is this all for? What's my broader aspiration? But two, which is more common, you can forget to enjoy life. Why? You're too busy working. One of the people in our little group that we worked with over COVID, which was 60 incredibly brilliant people, is named Safi Bacall, PhD from Stanford in physics. He wrote the book Loon Shots. He's worth tens of millions of dollars. And he has been asked to consult the presidents, blah, blah, blah. Incredible achiever. He said he learned one thing in all these groups, that he used to think, and he talks like a scientist, that happiness was a dependent variable based on achievement. And we learned is that's wrong. Happiness and achievement are independent variables.
Yes.
You can achieve and be happy, and you can achieve and be miserable. You can do nothing and be happy, and you can do nothing and be miserable. And what he finally learned is the great Western myth is, I will be happy. You know, when I get money, status, BMW, condominium, achievement, promotion, blah, blah, blah. It's all going to be good when. Well, not really. There is no when. And the point of the book is, and part of what did Michael Phelps think about doing after he won his 25th gold medal? Killing himself.
Yeah.
Why? He was focused on achievement. And if you have to beat next year, or if you have to beat last year, excuse me, well, the more you achieve, the harder it gets.
So then for those achievers, those extraordinary people that were already wired to be achievers, how then do you help them find that purpose or that quality of life compartment or balance yeah. or integration? What's that?
Well, what I try to help them do is two things. One is achievement is great for achievement. Achievement doesn't lead to happiness. Achievement doesn't lead to meaning. Achievement leads to achievement. And it's mm-hmm. a great thing as long as you take it for what it is and you don't take it for what it's not.
Yes.
And the myth is, well, the great myth, the great Western cultural art form, and I'm sure you've seen this a few thousand times, sounds like this. There's a person and they're sad. Oh, so sad. They spend money and they buy a product. Oh, and they become happy. This is called a commercial. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those before, but
we have been
millions of times we get the same message. You know what the message is? Happiness is out there. Happiness is something you buy. Happiness is a product. Happiness is money. Happiness is a degree, something. No, none of the above. You buy a product. How long does that product make you happy? A week, a month, not long. Then what do you have to have? Another product. You know, you achieve something. You got to have something bigger. And again, nothing wrong with achievement if you take it for what it is. And nothing wrong with money if you take it for what it is. Half the people I coach are billionaires.
Yeah.
They don't need, what am I supposed to do, help them make more money?
Right.
And you already got $1 billion. What does it matter? Right? Yeah. Think more money is going to make any difference? No.
Why is a billionaire coming for coaching?
They want to have a better life.
And what aspects are they identifying that they're lacking in?
A very common thing I'm very proud of. Coaching used to be seen as something for people with problems. Yeah, right. Not for winners, for losers. People I coach are not. people I coach are all winners. They're not winners. Yeah. They're mega winners. They are big winners. I'm not coaching anybody that's not a big, 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 big winner. Well, guess what? 10 tennis players have a coach. 10? Mm-hmm. Why do they have a coach? Well, they're the top 10 tennis players in the world. Why do they have a coach? Because they want to get better.
Yes.
You're like the top 10 tennis players. You're already spectacular people. And they keep trying to get better. That's why they're spectacular in the first place. They keep trying to get better. Bob Dylan has a good quote. He who is not busy being born is busy dying. Yeah, that's excellent. It. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, well, gee, why are you working out? You're in shape.
Why because we want to maintain it. We want to keep at it. If we don't keep at it, it's like exercising a muscle. It's going to get soft.
Why are you on a diet? You're thin. Yeah, right. Good. Why do you sell things? You have money.
Yeah. Marshall, exactly. You're so great. What's one thing that has surprised you over the years, but maybe you had a practice that was going this way and then you realized that this was an area of focus? Is there something that, are you continually surprised? I suppose you are, but what's something that surprised you in your practice?
I think, you know, what surprised me is just what you mentioned. What surprised me is the utility of helping people who are already great.
Uh-huh.
One thing I'm proud of is I'm a pioneer in that. Coaching, as I said, used to be fix the loser.
Yeah.
I'm not in the fix the loser business. I'm not in the motivate somebody who doesn't care business. I'm in the help the winner who really wants to get better business. Well, that was my breakthrough. And it came from my friend Alan, who basically taught me this lesson. And my whole mission in life is just helping successful people. If you do a Google search in quotes, helping successful leaders, and then in quotes, the first 500 hits you see, 450 are me.
Right on.
And the rest of the world is 50. Me, 450, rest of the world, 50. I won.
Marshall, you were, and you know what I'm also impressed with, and I want to ask you another question about you and Alan in a second, but at 73, right? When's your birthday?
Yeah, 73, March 20th.
Yeah. Woohoo. Okay. So 73 years old and you are still at it. You are relevant. You are there. I see you on LinkedIn. I see the new coaching academy. I see there's, you are so relevant. And I just absolutely wanted to also make a notice that you, I think, wrote the foreword to my friend Susan Scott's book that came out in January called Fierce Love. And she's 77.
Great.
And you guys are just, I mean, I love it because it's just while you're on this planet, like you said, you're like doing Bob Dylan. You're busy living. You're busy being born.
Well, you know what I could be doing instead of being on this call? Oh, you know what I could be doing? I could be playing crappy golf with old men at the country club while eating chicken salad sandwiches and discussing gallbladder surgery.
That is the lead. That is the lead quote for the column right there, Marsh.
Before that sounds like a lot of fun.
I'm framing that quote. Before I let you go, because I'm conscious of time and I'm so grateful, I want to find a way to come and visit you in Dubai because that's closer to me than the U.S. And I want an excuse to go to that amazing building. How did you and Alan meet? Who introduced you or who introduced him or how did you two find each other?
Well, look, I was introduced by the CEO of Boeing, Phil Condit. Phil somehow heard about me as a coach and asked me. Alan, fantastic leader to start with, but Phil wanted him to do a better job of, not a better job, a bigger job of reaching out across Boeing and providing leadership for the whole company. And just asked me if I would be interested in being his coach. And, you know, I said yes. And, you know, we met. And my whole coaching is focused on results, positive long-term change. And Alan's an engineer. So we got along. We're writing a new book together now. He's a main author, but I'm helping him in with his new book. It's very exciting. It's about stakeholder-centered leadership. And, you know, Alan is just an amazing, amazing guy. And so he's just a great friend. That was, I don't know, how many years ago? 30 years ago, I guess. Long, long time ago. But we've remained buddies and, you know, helping, you know, just try to work together, have fun. He's like me, you know, he's 75.
You know. The power of relationships and the power of ongoing relevance and sharing your impact with people that, as you said, are already successful, but want to be even more successful. Marshall Goldsmith, it has been, I mean, you know, back when I was with CNN, I've interviewed presidents and a pope and even Princess Diana before, unfortunately, she died. But I honestly put you at the top of the list because you are impacting in such a positive way. And it has, I have followed you and been just, it's a thrill. Thank you. And I'm glad to hear it's better, that talking to me is better than talking about gallbladder surgery and eating bad chicken.
That's much better. Much, much better.
You are amazing. Go IU. Great to talk to you, Marshall. Enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you so much. I'll be in touch with your assistant about when it runs, probably in May. So I'll try to coordinate.
Look, okay, two things. One, send me a note, but yes, put your picture in. Over, I got a good heart, but a bad memory. Send me a note, include your picture and your bio, and say, great, I want to be in 100 coaches. Just send me the note. We need more people in Ireland. I think we need more people. Let's vote. I vote yes for more
people. Yes, I second that motion.
And then send me that note. And then also, if you ever want to talk, just ask. Just call me up.
Thank you. Thank you. I've got your number now. You have mine.
Okay.
Aye, aye. Thank you, bye-bye. Marshall. Bye-bye.